Dr. Murthy, thank you so much for being here. So for everyone in this room who thinks their preschool gossip might be more important than what he has to share with us, just give me 8 minutes, okay? I think that we're going to be able to get through this. I mean, Dr. Murthy, your list of accomplishments goes on, being the 19th and 21st Surgeon General of the United States, which is rare, by the way. They loved him so much, they brought him back for a reprise. Partly because you have been on the cutting edge of issues that are on the top of minds of Americans, and not in the way that I think that political parties or political conversation is cutting through. You are on the cutting edge of issues that I've been talking about for the last couple of years, namely the epidemic of loneliness and the fabric of social connection. So as we think about the Children's Museum, as we look to the future of building a new museum and thinking about how the Children's Museum, with all of the important programs, not just within the Upper West Side, but the city as a whole, is a place, how do you think that we should be thinking about the Children's Museum, given these issues that you've been looking at, epidemic of loneliness, importance of social connection?
Well, thanks so much, Emily. And you have to call me Vivek. I just don't know any other way to dialogue with you since we've been friends for so long. But I first just want to say a huge thank you to Laurie Tisch, who has just been such an incredible source of generosity, support, philanthropy in this city and really around the country, and a role model, I know, for so many of us. This issue of loneliness and isolation is really profound. And I'm going to ask you all something that I ask people everywhere I travel, which is, how many people here know somebody in your life who may be struggling with loneliness? Yeah, so almost everyone. This is an incredibly common thing. 1 in 2 adults are struggling with measurable levels of loneliness, but the numbers are highest among young people, which is what's relevant to today's conversation. And this is not just a bad feeling that people have when they struggle with loneliness. We've now found, as I shared in a report that we issued in May of this year, that when people struggle with loneliness, their risk of depression, anxiety, and suicide goes up. But their risk of other things go up as well, like heart disease and dementia and premature death. The risk we also see play out in the workplace, with people who struggle with loneliness tend to have lower productivity, lower retention in the workplace. Kids who struggle with loneliness don't do as well in school. And communities that struggle with loneliness and fragmentation are much more likely to end up being polarized and to turn against one another, which is a profound challenge we have in America today. So the bottom line is, this is actually an urgent societal issue for us to deal with. And there are things we can do. That's the good news. At an organizational level, we need more institutions like the Children's Museum, like faith organizations, to actually bring people of diverse backgrounds together, to actually dialogue with one another, to learn about one another. We need what people see in museums around their cities to actually reflect their life experience. That helps them feel that they and understand that they truly belong in that community. But lastly, as individuals, we can also do things, right? We can, in our own lives, take a few minutes each day to spend with people that we care about, calling them on the phone, visiting them. It could be 5 minutes that you spend reaching out to somebody, but when you do that every day, it makes a difference. We can make sure we're fully present with other people when we're interacting with them. So often we've got our phones, and we're looking at our phones, and we're talking to other people, but that distracts us and it reduces the quality of our connection. So these are small things we can do. And the last thing I'll share with you is a simple, very, very simple, but if you're like me, you probably had a friend call you when you're busy, when you're about to enter a meeting, and you've just silenced the phone and said, you know what, let me just text them and tell them I'll call them back later. Or I'll just call them back when I have more time. But that time never comes, right? Because life is busy. So I've taken more to just picking up the phone when they call, even if it's just to say, hey, I'm about to walk into a dinner. Can I call you back, a little bit later? Would that be okay? And just the simple act of hearing their voice can actually help you feel more connected to them and them to you. So there are small steps we can do as individuals, but as institutions, if we can create opportunities for people to come together and dialogue, actually dialogue, not just exist in right next to each other, not saying a word to one another, but actually engage in thoughtful dialogue, that can help build bridges that create belonging in our communities.
Thank you. So before I get to the next question, I'm actually going to ask our friends over here if they'd like to listen to this question. I think it's going to be a great one. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Now, while we have you, this is a very, it's a difficult moment as a parent. We had kids, each of our first two kids were born within a month of each other. It's a difficult moment to be a parent because we don't know how we ourselves feel. Like, we are hurting, and we don't know how to bring our children into the conversation. So having you here, I have to ask, how should we be talking to our children in this incredibly difficult moment when we ourselves feel insecure?
Well, this is a really important question, and I've been thinking about this as a parent myself. And look, there's no simple answer to this. The events that have happened in Israel over the last almost 2 weeks have just been devastating to so many of us. And even if you don't have a family member that was directly impacted, many of us have been impacted in some way by the tragedy that's unfolding there. But it's not only that. We're dealing with the war in Ukraine, right? We're dealing with just terrible tragedies that are happening every day in our communities here in the United States, with losing kids and adults to acts of gun violence in neighborhoods all across America. There is a lot of heavy, heavy things happening in the country, and how to talk to our kids is not easy. But a few things I try to keep in mind. One is to recognize that our kids are absorbing what's happening even if we're not talking to them, right? They're hearing the news, they're reading the paper, they're talking to friends in school, they're seeing the stories posted on social media. So ignoring the issue often isn't an effective strategy. We have to start a conversation with our kids. The good news is we don't have to start that conversation knowing all the answers. And we also don't need to pretend that we are not affected ourselves by the difficult developments that we're all experiencing around the world. We can share some of our pain and some of our confusion with our children, but importantly, we can ask them how they are doing, how they are feeling, how they are processing things. I'll tell you, when the war in Ukraine broke out, I thought that my then 6-year-old child had no idea what was going on. But one day, when we were driving to school, he said to me, Papa, are they still fighting in Ukraine? And I was so shocked. I was like, I didn't even know he knew about this, but he's been tracking it all along. And lastly, I would just say this. In moments when kids feel scared, one of the most important things they need is to know that they have a place where they are safe and where they can be loved. And that so often is their parents. It's their siblings. It's their grandparents. It's their extended family. And so even if you don't know how to solve the crisis in the Middle East or in Ukraine or the episodes of violence that we are experiencing each day in America, even if you can't solve those, and it's okay if you can't, if you can remind your children that they are loved, that they are cared for, and that they can talk to you openly about what they're feeling and thinking about these tragedies as they unfold, that will go a long way to helping them know that they are safe and they are cared for.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. Unfortunately, we have to wrap it. Do you have more?
Well, just one thing I just want to touch on, one final thing, which is that, so often, I'll tell you what I'm worried about most of all. I'm worried that when I travel around the country, many people feel that our country has descended into some sort of despair, that it's somehow everywhere you look, it looks like bad things are happening, that hope is not around the corner. And this sense of despair and negativity really has settled in, I think, for so many people. And I think at this point in time, it's particularly important for us to think in our lives about how we can be antidotes for despair in a society that is becoming increasingly pessimistic. And how do we do that? Well, we become antidotes for despair based on how we treat the people around us, based on the causes that we choose to support, the engagements we choose to have in our communities. Because so many people I encounter are saying, Vivek, it feels like it's become more important these days in society to be right than to be kind, more important to be powerful than to be compassionate, or to look out for oneself than to look out for others. It feels in some ways like we've lost our moral compass. But this is a time where I think it's more important than ever for us to reground ourselves in the values that truly make our society and our country strong. And those are the core values of kindness and compassion, of generosity, friendship. These are the values that we need now more than ever. And it's up to us to model those and to build those out. And the good news is we're not alone. I have the privilege of seeing these values lived out each and every day. People are doing it quietly. Millions of people around the country who are choosing to invest more in their families, who are choosing to check on their neighbors, to reach out and help people who are struggling in their communities. I encounter bosses who are trying to make their workplaces safe places where people can actually build connection with one another. I've run into now mayors who are trying to make their cities cities of kindness. There are millions of people around who are building this invisible movement that I think all of us are part of to create a kinder, more compassionate, more courageous, and optimistic world. And so I say that to you because I don't think that that changes because of that pessimism or despair because somebody passes a new law or because a different person gets elected or because some new program is started in a community. It changes when each of us decide it's going to change in our lives, in our families, in our communities, and when we choose to treat each other differently, when we choose to engage in our communities to support one another. If we do that, my hope is that we can fundamentally realize that in our hearts, we are not by nature cynical and angry people. We truly are courageous and optimistic and kind and generous. And this, I hope, will be our opportunity, the moment when we reclaim that identity and build the kind of world that our kids need, one where they know they belong, where we look out for each other and have one another's backs, and we can do the things that we dream of, that we know are possible, but only if we work together and support one another. So, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. We know how busy you are. Thank you.
Thanks.